Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Five one double 51 is our text number. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And of course, today we are hearing so many stories, so many memories of the late, great Larry Gogan. Claire Bell Maguire, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
You inadvertently did a bit of work for Larry Gogan.
Did indeed, yeah. It's a long, long time ago, and try to take your listeners back to a different Ireland when Larry was doing Pop Call, and that would have been the mid-60s. And the number people used to ring for Pop Call was very similar to the number that we had for our telephone in Dublin at the time. And every single week before the programme would begin, probably about an hour beforehand, our phone would start ringing, and it would be the operator saying, "We have a call for you." And it could be from anywhere across Ireland.
And of course, and just again, because we're talking to some people who may not know this now, Claire.
Indeed, that's
but
right.
This was the time of the press button A, press button B
Absolutely.
Phones.
Absolutely. And you could actually hear people putting the money in to the box. So we'd pick up the phone. We were only kids at the time, and we tried to put on very posh voices and grown-up voices. And we loved it. We absolutely adored doing this. And they would get through. Now, we would sometimes say they had a wrong number. But the problem was you'd have two operators. You'd have the person. They would get their operator, say, wherever it was in Ireland. And then that operator would go to the Dublin operator. And then from there, that operator would say, "I have a call for you." And so then the person would eventually get through, but you'd be trying to talk to the operator because you didn't want them to kind of get the wrong number. You know, you want them to get through to Larry. And I think they would be swamped with calls as well. And they'd just go through and you'd have to explain to them they had the wrong number. But in some cases, and this actually a lot of cases, people would say to you, "This is my last penny." And you feel really terrible for them. So what we used to do was our little service was we'd write down their name and we'd write down the song they wanted and who it was for. And then the next day, my dad at that stage was working in the Irish Times, and he would go in and he would get them typed up. And then he'd go across to the GPO and he'd post them. And many, many years later, I met Larry and he said, "Yeah, we used to get these lists in, all right."
They so were your father's list came through to your house.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the stories that we heard during that time, you know, were people who were heartbroken that they couldn't get through. And they'd say, "I've been trying now for 4 weeks to get through, and it's my girlfriend's birthday." I remember one man, and he would have been a man to me. He probably was only like 19, maybe 17, 18, 19 at the time. And he wanted a particular request for his girlfriend. He was in Limerick and she was in Mullingar, and he hadn't seen her for 3.5 weeks. And that always stuck in my mind. And he was crying down the phone and he was telling me, I think I was 10 at the time, telling me that if he couldn't get this request, she probably wouldn't love him anymore. And he wanted to get this request played for her. And I think it was the Beatles. So Dad was put on the phone to him and he sort of calmed him down and he reassured him that in some way or whatever, he would get this request to Larry. And he did.
I suppose, Claire, what people really, you have to really cast your mind back to remember what a big deal it was if you heard your name called out on the radio.
Huge, huge. People used to listen. I mean, people would be right up close to the radio. This was the event. And Larry's voice coming through, which was so reassuring. And it was, you know, it was what teenagers, and even as young as I was, I realised this was an event. You know, that this was something that was happening, that your name, you were connecting with someone else in another part of Ireland. You know, this was completely new. Like, there had been silence before that. And he brought that great energy and that great, I suppose, colour into a very grey Ireland of the time.
And you music, know? A very particular
oh,
kind of music.
Incredible. Like music that you wouldn't normally hear. You know, that you were secretly going off and listening to in a music shop, you know, and you didn't admit to your parents that you were listening to either. And he was playing this music, you know, and there were so many diverse tastes That was the other thing. When people would give their requests, you'd look at them, and some of them would want something that was in the, what they called in those days, the hit parade. And then there were other people who wanted something that was Irish. You know, it was quite a mix of, and it was meant to be pop. But, you know, it would be very diverse.
And did you ever ring in yourself, Claire?
Yeah, we tried a couple of times, but of course, again, like that, we didn't get through. You know, people would be ringing an hour beforehand. Like, it would start, you know, the phones would start literally about an hour beforehand. That's how we knew. Like, the calls would just keep coming through. And they would just press the wrong digit.
I mean, you were delighted because, of course, had this little special link to this glamorous program. But for your parents, it must have been a bit of an annoyance to have their phone hijacked.
Absolutely, because at that stage, they had two babies. And the babies would be being put to bed and then the phone would ring. And my mother would go mental. And she would come in because in those days, again, to remind people, there was only one phone in the house and generally it was in the hall and it had a very loud ring. So you'd go and you'd hear the phone and we'd run to the end of the stairs and we'd sit on the stairs until the next call came through and she would take the phone off the hook. And as soon as she was gone back into the kitchen or she was gone into the sitting room, we go and we put it back on again. So the call would come through. And then the babies would wake up and she'd give us a filthy look and she'd go back up the stairs again to try and calm the poor babies down. And like, there'd be 2 hours of this.
And you did actually end up, you met Larry ultimately and talked to him about
this. Yeah, I did. I actually worked in RT for a while as continuity announcer. So I did meet him and it was lovely to meet him. And I brought that memory up with him. And he said, yes, they did get the lists. So it was good. And I was able to tell Dad, those lists got through OK. So it was really nice for him as well to know that his work wasn't in vain.
Absolutely. Claire, thank you so much for sharing that story
and
with us.
He'd be so missed. He really will. He was such an amazing person. He's just going to be so missed. I just feel for everybody as well in RTE today who knew him.
Indeed. Thank you for that, Claire. I want to go to Dave. Dave Dennison, how are you?
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Dave, tell me about your band, Press the Thingy.
We had a band, myself and two good friends of mine set it up in the 90s. And we started writing music basically in a mobile home in Rush. We used to go down nearly every weekend.
The glamour of it.
Yes, it was glamorous, actually. It was one of those posh mobiles. But anyway, we had this game that we used to play after Larry's show at the time was 12 to 3. So we used to wake up after a night's music. And the game was whoever could guess what Larry was going to play next didn't have to make breakfast. But we had to change that to guess what style of music Larry's going to play next. Because the diversity in his show was unbelievable.
Okay, so there was nobody was going to guess exactly what was going to be played, so you had to get
exactly.
In the game.
So we had to get the style of music.
And did this keep you entertained for long, Dave?
This kept us entertained for the whole summer and trying to get through to the Just a Minute quiz, which we never did. So we wrote a song and said, dedicated to Larry.
I think we have got a clip of that song that we can play for you now. That's there. You're again highlighting the fact you could never get through when you give us a clue for the Just a Minute quiz. That was a great song,
exactly.
Dave.
Exactly. Yeah.
So were you a ska band? Was that your style?
No,
at the time?
He actually gave us. We decided that we'd do Larry's show as a band, as in we did all sorts of styles of music and had great fun. We did traditional Irish ska, reggae, punk, rock, everything. So. And we just loved him, you know, listened to him all the time.
And did you actually meet him?
Never met him, but he got to hear the song.
And did he like it?
He loved it, but of course we thought we were going to be rock stars. Larry's going to play it, but he's not that type of man. So
yeah, you picked the wrong subject for your song there. That was the one thing he was probably never going to play on the radio.
But we were just delighted that he did get to hear it. We got it through him, through means, and heard back that he loved the song. So we were happy enough with that.
And tell me, what happened to the music career, Dave?
We just got old, got married, the usual thing. I still do a few bits and pieces and write lyrics for friends of mine. Still involved. I don't think it ever leaves you. So onwards and upwards, as they say.
Onwards and upwards. Dave, thanks a mil for that.
No problem.
That Kate, memory.
To everyone.
And that song, indeed. I want to go now to a very familiar name to our listeners, Mike Murphy. Good afternoon to you.
Katie, how you doing?
Mike, I understand you have only just heard the news.
Ah, listen, I'm kind of a bit stunned by it, to tell you the truth, because, you know, with all the losses, I don't even need to mention the Gay and Marion, but it's just pretty a bit of a shock, all right. And he was a lovely guy, Larry was, and, you know, I knew he hadn't been well for some time, but it's a shock, and particularly on the day in question, you know, it's really awful.
Take me back. How long would you have known Larry?
God, actually, I'm sorry you asked me that question because it goes so far back. I've known Larry since we were in Henry Street, when Radio Éireann was in Henry Street, and I was a young announcer, and he was a DJ. And the thing about Larry was he never stopped being a DJ. A DJ was what he was. A DJ was what he wanted to be, and he never wanted to change from that. And I do remember at one stage, many years afterwards, saying to him, do you ever fancy yourself doing a show, a kind of a chat show or anything? Oh, no. I hate that sort of thing. No, I like my records. I like the show I do. I'm enjoying it. I don't want to change. Many years back when we were in Henry Street, there was a time when we, the presenters, as we were, God help us, were trying to get a raise from RTE. We were trying to increase our lot because we were paid buttons then, as indeed it finished up, I might as well tell you, years later. But we were paid buttons, and I remember the presenters, God help us, decided we'd form a working party, and the working party consisted of me as the chairman and Larry Gogan and Brendan Balfe as my two able assistants. I was always willing to fight, and Brendan and Larry weren't quite so willing. Larry particularly, he said, Mike, leave them. I will not leave them. He'd say, sure, listen, aren't we earning enough? We are not earning enough. And so I'd have to go into the forefront, and I'd be in there. Brendan Balfe tells a story about me slamming a door on the head of music, and all Brendan heard from the outside was, and Brendan Balfe agrees with every word I say. Brendan said he nearly passed on. And Larry was never willing to get into the nitty-gritty of actually the scrap as such. And he would be a reluctant third in any meeting of, are we all agreed on that? Okay, all right. But
he was not in him, though, was it? He was just too nice a man.
He was just one of the nicest people I ever met in my entire life, Larry was. And all he wanted was his disc jockeying. We used to go, those were the golden days when all the show bands were launching records. And, of course, we were all invited to them. I'd be doing the Rowan Amon, as RTE called it, to give us the bit of Irish. It was the only bit of Irish that I ever really copped. But Rowan Amon, the record programme, that was the Housewife's Choice, in case you didn't understand my Irish.
Beautiful.
And Larry was doing his DJing and all that. And, of course, he was a brilliant commercial reader. And I think he and Gay were the two best voices on radio. Although I have to, as I think of it now, I have to think of, in terms of news reading, I remember Dave Timlin never got the credit that he deserved, because Dave had the most wonderful speaking voice and diction, and so had Larry and Gay, and their diction was simply superb. And Larry he was a wonderful commercials reader, and he was the most in demand at the time. And that was it. He just simply loved it, and that was what he loved. He would do his DJing, and then he'd go home to Flurry and the family out in Temple Oak. And that was his life, and he didn't want to change, and he never did. And I know that when he lost Flurry, he lost a part of himself. I think the last time I saw Larry was unfortunately at Jimmy McGee's funeral. There's another great
another
name.
Legend indeed.
And that was the last time I saw him, and he wasn't well, but we still had a great laugh. I mean, he had a wonderful sense of humour, and he was willing to laugh at anything. And he and I used to laugh a lot together when we were in each other's company.
Like, I think, because as we said there, he's the nicest man, and that's what we keep hearing, and anyone who listened to him over all those decades will have that sense of this incredibly generous, nice.
But for
those that knew him, he had, as you say, a sharp, mischievous sense of humour.
Ah, he was impish, you know, an impish sense of humour, you know. And I'll tell you what, one thing, just as I'm speaking to you now, when Gay was quite ill, and Gay and I were very close, as you probably know, but there was a big day for Larry. This is only, time goes so quickly, unfortunately, when you're heading towards the finishing post, but when you think back on, Gay wasn't well, and there was a big day RTE had for Larry. And now, is it a year ago?
It's just a year ago. We're just at the anniversary of
that. Is it?
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that right? It's a year ago.
Exactly.
And Gay wasn't well at the time, and we were invited to go to Larry's do, and he said to me, "Are you going to go?" I said, "Well, I'd really like to go." But I said, "Are you thinking of going, or what's the story?" And he said, "Oh, listen," he said, "we have to go." He said, "We have. There's no question about it." I said, "Are you going to be well enough to go?" And he said, "Yes." So the pair of us went together. And I mean, Gay was not well at the time, but he absolutely insisted on being there. And as he said to me when we were on our way back home after it, he said to me, "Look, there was no question about it." I said, how are you feeling now? He said, "I'm a bit tired," and he said that, "but we had to be there for Larry. There was no question about it." And it was that kind of affection in which he was held by everybody. Everybody simply loved him.
Did you ever do a candid camera on him?
No, I don't think I did, actually. No, never caught him. I'd love to have, but I don't think I ever did. I would have got him, and he would have got great fun out of that. I mean, he absolutely would. But I never did. Ah, Larry was too nice to catch.
It was contagious. He even made you nice.
Yeah. He made me nice. He was just the loveliest guy. He was the loveliest man. He really was. I'd be amazed if there's a single person who could say anything controversial or negative about Larry. I don't think it is to be found.
I think, certainly that is the strong sense we're getting all day here in RTE and not just around this building, but obviously all the thousands of people calling in and texting in. Of course, that he was, as you say, all he wanted to do was be a DJ, but he had a genuine sense of responsibility, I think, towards bands and Irish, young people starting out in the music industry.
When people weren't playing Irish records, Larry continued to play them. And it used to amaze not just me, but everybody, how he kept up to date on what was happening in all the pop charts, as they were called then, and right up to, I think, the present day. I mean, he studied it, he read up on it, and he never faltered in his commitment to Irish music. Like the Irish, to be honest with you, the Irish music industry owes a hell of a lot to Larry. And I know he loved you too, and he loved Bono and Edge and Larry, and he just loved those guys, and he thought that they were what they became, apostles of Irish music around the world. And any excuse he had, he would play them. And he was the same with Irish show bands at the time, and then with Irish groups and records right through his career. So I think Irish music owes Larry a lot.
And I know you're talking to us from the States, Mike, of course, that's why you only heard the news so late in the day. But it just strikes me that he must be unique around the globe, that somebody that was in his 80s, or into his 80s eventually, is still seen as the king of pop and so up to date, and having that position on what would be, I suppose, a young person's radio station.
But you see, even right to the end, Larry still sounded young. He had that quality in his voice that he still sounded young. There was a DJ who was on Radio Luxembourg, Alan Freeman, and he had that quality as well. He was, even when he was old, when he was, I don't know what age he was, but he the voice still sounded as fresh. And Larry did too. Larry sounded as fresh when he was in his 70s, 80s, whatever, as he did when he was young. So it was, he was lucky that he had that quality, but he had an effervescence about him, a life about him. Even when you met him, it was there, the effervescence.
I wonder, was he ever poached? Did anyone attempt to poach him? Would he ever have the thoughts to go? Because he could have been a big name in the UK.
Yeah, he could. He could, absolutely, and I think there were people who wanted to get him from BBC. There was talk about it, I know, at one stage. I don't know if anything ever came of it. I don't think it did, and I don't know the circumstances. But certainly there was talk at one stage that he might be going to the BBC, I remember as well.
But he didn't, and again, that would be his style. That he would, the loyalty that he had in his family life, and that he would have that same sense of loyalty to RTE and to hear.
Indeed, and before I go, Katie, I'd like to pass on my condolences to his family. He loved them so much, and I know they reciprocated.
Mike Murphy, thank you so much for joining us with your thoughts. And as I say, I know we came to you just as you learnt about that very sad news, but we do appreciate you sharing that with us today. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Or email joe@rte.ie. Eleanor McAvoy, good afternoon to you.
Hey, Katie, how are you doing?
Eleanor, everyone will know you, of course, from your music, but you also have a new role, or a role at the moment as chair of the Irish Music Rights Organisation. So what does the passing of Larry Gogan mean to musicians and bands around the country?
Oh, look, it's a sad, sad day. It really is, because, you know, this industry is very unkind. It can be very unkind. And you know what? In an industry that was very unkind, he was extremely kind. He exuded kindness. He'd always go out, you know, of his way to say hello to you. I remember early on meeting him at some kind of music industry function and him going out of his way to come over and say hello to me. I mean, I was gobsmacked, and he said, congratulations on all your success. You know, as far as I was concerned, he was a legend, and he was coming over to me. I couldn't believe it. But I think maybe, you know, writers and musicians loved him because he seemed to love the song, and the genre was irrelevant to him. He didn't care what element of the music business you were in once it was good. Somebody posted one of his last playlists there, and I saw on it a host of Irish acts from, you know, there was Thin Lizzy and U2 and Boomtown Rats. But he had a segue from Aslan into Joe Dolan into Westlife. Aslan into Joe Dolan into Westlife. You know, very few people could carry that off.
You gotta love that, in fairness.
Yeah, so he didn't care what the what element, you know.
There was no snobbery there at all about the musical genre.
No, he was just the way he was. That was it. And it was funny, I was really struck by something that Tom McGuire said on The Late Late the other night when he was talking about Marianne. He said, you know, years ago people listened to the radio, and then he said, and then radio started listening to the people. But Larry Gogan understood what the people wanted to hear. He seemed to know
from the very beginning.
Yeah, he seemed to have that secret bond, knowing exactly what they wanted to hear and when they wanted to hear it and the order with which they wanted to hear it. He understood that. And, you know, Mike Murphy there a minute ago said that the Irish music industry owes him a lot, and we do. We really do.
And I think that what's very clear, as you said, the tributes that have been pouring in here all day, is the sense that was appreciated, that was acknowledged, it was understood that he wasn't just a DJ, he was a champion for the industry here.
He was a champion to the industry, but because it was good, you know, he'd pick out the good stuff, and he seemed to do that. Like, it's very hard when you look at the list of songs, like in the Golden Era, like, you know, have various lists of songs. There'd never be a dud amongst that. You know, he seemed to know exactly what he was playing. He didn't just put stuff in for the sake of it. He was just very much himself. There was an authenticity in him, you know, and again, in an industry that has a lot of very non-authentic people, he just exuded authenticity and kindness, and that's worth so much. It really is.
And would you have seen much of him over the years, Eleanor?
I would, yeah, just because I've been around a long time. You know, just from, you know, in the corridors or, you know, music industry functions and stuff. And it was always just, he was always so nice, so kind. He always seemed to know when you'd something out as well, and he'd always have a lovely positive comment to make about it. And it's so rare. And no, we're heartbroken today now, really am.
Heartbroken. Okay, Eleanor, thank you for that. I know you're under a deadline, so I'll let you go. But thank you for sharing those thoughts, those memories of Larry with us. I want to go now to Michael Flanagan. Good afternoon, Michael.
Katie, how are you?
You were around the show band scene.
Indeed, and I was going back to the late 70s and 80s. I used to manage Doc Carroll, Mick Delahunty Sr. and Tarzan and the Monkeys, a local band here from Athlone. And Larry, there were sponsored programs at the time, Katie. I suppose you might remember them, but they ran for a quarter of an hour. And Larry used to host my program, Michael Flanagan Entertainment's Present. And we were running around 11 venues of dance halls around the country. Larry would read out the list of bands playing, and then he'd also read out our own show bands where they were playing. And that went on for a quarter of an hour. He'd spin different records in between. But I always found Larry to be jovial and always in great form. Any time you'd meet Larry, he was saying, isn't it great to be alive? And you know, always looking on the bright side.
And as Eleanor was saying there, when you talk about the genres of music and Larry, of course, you know, his professional life took him through all those eras where various music sounds were big. But he was a big supporter of the show bands as well, wasn't he?
He was. And, you know, at that time, the Irish show bands, they owed a lot to Larry and the late Val Joyce for playing the Irish records. It was very hard that time as a band manager to get spots on the different air to get the records promoted that a band might be just after bringing out a new record. You try every angle in the book to get it played on air. But Larry would always pick out Irish show bands and give them a leg up, as it were, to further the cause and try and get the records played on air. Val Joyce was also very good for that. But
and tell us, just remind us, what would it mean to a band, a show band, to hear their records on the radio?
Well, let's put it this way. You were running a venue, Katie, and I was the band manager, and I'd ring you up knowing maybe that the record was going to be played on the radio at such a time, and I'd say, Katie, listen to the band, you'll hear it on the radio. The record was good enough for anywhere within reason, because you'd say, I'll give them a shot, and it could be the start of maybe 4 or 5 gigs in that particular venue.
So it could be the start of something big, basically, for
absolutely
for a band. So it meant a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, it was their moment of glory. And if they were good enough when they played at a gig in a ballroom, it was up to the band to perform, and then if the promoter was happy enough with the band and the crowd was acceptable, there was more dates coming.
And back at that time in the 70s, like, was Larry Gogan a name? Was he somebody that people understood was a kind of a mini celebrity?
Well, he was not a mini, but a huge celebrity. He was in every kitchen and every car radio. At the time, Larry, just a minute quiz, he became famous for that. And in fact, one time I was lucky enough to win that quiz. And I don't know what came in the post, it's so long ago.
I think they used to give out cross pens. That was definitely one of the prizes. One of our producers was showing off his prize, a picture of his prize was earlier.
Really? Yeah, there was a pen and a bag, some kind of a bag with RTE on it or something. But look at it, it was just the fun of participating, not alone winning, but participating.
The bragging rights as well, Michael.
I suppose if you won, you could always say, I won the Just a Minute quiz with Larry. But he's going to be sadly missed. And his voice was, he had a unique voice, Katie. He had a voice completely different to anybody else on the radio. And I think that was an outstanding feature. When you heard Larry's voice, you knew there was good music coming down the line, you know?
Yeah, indeed. And I'm sure Larry would not want anything better to be said about him than exactly that. When you heard his voice, you knew there was good music on the way. Michael, absolutely. Thanks for that. Thank you for that. I want to go to Flo McSweeney. Now, good afternoon, Flo.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Flo, before we go any further, I want to play a jingle that is very dear to Larry Gogan fans.
Just a minute, the 60-second quiz.
Now, yes. Flo McSweeney, can you tell the nation your connection with that jingle?
I'm singing that jingle. we did that sometime in around 1983 with Bill Whelan. We did a series of stings and jingles for Radio 2, as it was called then. But when we were in recording them, the big one was that one, because we were taking over from the the original one. So it's the big one.
And that's the one that has played over all those years?
Yes.
That is extra. Have you got royalties on it, Flo?
I wish I did. But unfortunately, no. As Mike Murphy said, we were all paid buttons and we left being paid buttons. So I probably got paid buttons for that as well. I don't even have the buttons.
A bit of an honour, though, I have to say, a badge of honour to be able to tell people that you were the voice of the Just a Minute quiz jingle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a huge honour to do. And when I was doing it at the time, I knew it was, you know, the 60-second quiz was stuff of legends. Everybody loved it. So it was a big deal to do it.
Absolutely. Go back to your time. Your first band would have been, was it Toy with Rhythm?
Oh my God, I've quite a few first bands, but yeah, Toy with Rhythm, I was in the early 80s with them. Ed Dara was one of the band members, and we won a big competition with Mem that was sponsored by the Evening Herald and Maxell Tapes, which will give you an idea of the history of how long ago that was. And our prize was that we had a single produced by Bill Whelan. So when we were promoting it, Ed and myself, when I think back to it now, we used to get into her Mini and we used to just drive out to RTE, blag our way past security, blag our way past the desk in radio and go into studios with the single, handing them out. But we knew that Larry, we had the best chance of getting it played on Larry Gogan's show, because he would deviate from the playlist, and he was so supportive of Irish music and of young bands. So I remember that first day going in and giving the single to Larry, and on the way home, we're on the Stillorgan Road, it's on the radio. It was that quick.
Wow.
Now you'd have to pay thousands to some PR person to get it played.
To get even in the door, I would have thought.
Absolutely.
Do you think it helped that you had the same name as Flory?
I think it might have. He never forgot me. And I would meet him over the years. And as my star waned and I was in studio a lot doing voiceovers, I would run into him quite a bit. And he always remembered me and always remembered my name. He did call me Flory a couple of times.
As Mike, you were listening to Mike Murphy there, who, as you say, we just woke up in the States and had only just heard the news. But just that sense that he was, as he said, he never met anyone, and he'd be hard pressed to meet anyone anywhere that had a bad word to say about Larry.
He was very even. He struck me as someone who was always very even-tempered. He was always in good humour. He was, and what Eleanor said as well, there was a kindness to him. And the fact that he treated, especially musicians, you know, I think he treated you the same if you were U2 or if you were trying to become U3 or U4. He treated us all equally and with the same level of respect.
And I suppose, as Eleanor was saying, that's not something that's in huge quantities in the music business necessarily.
No,
it's a pretty rough game for most people.
She said something that really struck a chord with me in a business that is incredibly unkind, and it is. It's cutthroat and unkind, and even more so now. I heard Dave Fanning earlier on this morning on radio saying that, you know, when his voice came on the radio or when he walked into the canteen and Larry was there, it was like, you know, that everything was okay with the world. For me, it's like the grown-ups are all leaving us. That's what I feel like.
Yeah, I must say, but you always got that frisson when you saw Larry Gogan. You always felt, there's Larry Gogan.
He was a big star always. I mean, even, you know, 40 years ago, he was a legend then. It was as if he had been on the airwaves for 40 or 50 years then. He just had that aura about him. And I think the man was extraordinarily lacking in ego. He had a humility to him, which is something that is unusual, even back then.
Unique, perhaps.
Very.
Indeed. Flo, thank you so much for that. And congratulations on being the voice of the Just a Minute jingle. That is something
Katie.
I would be telling my grandchildren, I'll tell you.
I will.
I want to go to Ken now. Ken Doyle, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie. Good afternoon to you.
Yeah, and people will know you, Ken, of course, from Bagatelle.
Well, I tell you what, I'd like to say a huge thank you, first of all, to the great audience that we've got over the years, because in August of this year, we are now 41 years old as a band.
Wow.
But I would love to thank the late, great Larry Gogan, because Larry Gogan was hugely instrumental in making Summer in Dublin the number one hit that we had back in 1980. And he played it off the air, and not only that song with second violin, that he gave us plays and great words of encouragement. He was just, he was really one of nature's gentlemen, I have to say, you know.
And when you say he was instrumental in that, because I think, well, anybody who was around in the summer of 1980 will remember Summer in Dublin. It is, it's the sound of that summer, of that year. Was he the first to play it? How was his connection with it?
He just gave us, Larry, like Ronan Collins, Ronan's a great guy as well. I mean, Ronan and Larry always very supportive of Irish bands, but they also have very historic knowledge. They actually can go back in and tell you who sang a backing vocal and things like that. They're just incredible guys. But Larry was, any time you'd meet him, we'd meet him at a few functions and that, you know what I mean? And he'd say, oh, Bagatelle here, all the stars are here today. As Gay Byrne once said of Terry Wogan, I think Larry was born with a sunny disposition. He had such a reassuring voice as well for everybody. He was a real gentleman.
He was a gentleman, but as you say, not just a gentleman, but actually did extraordinary, was an extraordinary help to the likes of yourselves out there trying to get your career on the way.
Yeah, I mean, he recognised, like, that song has pretty much become like an alternative anthem, as we discovered from our worldwide musical travels. You know, it means an awful lot to people, because I think anybody could have a Summer in Dublin. It's not an elitist song, you know. You can walk down Grafton Street, they need to be run over by a bus and all that kind of stuff, you know. But he was just so good to us every time, and the encouragement he would give you, because, I mean, at the time we were just starting out, we didn't know her, you know. And he would give you great words of encouragement before he played your track and after he played your track, you know. He'd give you great, great words of encouragement.
Indeed. Ken Doyle, thank you for joining us with that. I'm going to have to take another break now. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
That, of course, is that very familiar jingle for all of Larry Gogan's fans out there. I want to go to one of those fans now. Joe Murphy, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You were a regular on the Just a Minute quiz.
It was a bit of a hobby. from the time I remember, they used to, before 2FM actually opened, they used to play music just to test the transmission, long before the station actually came on air. But from the time it came on air, Larry Beyond, and around the lunchtime, and there was only two or three of us in the shop, and it was, that was on all day on 2FM, but especially for Larry, we'd turn it up and wait for him to announce callers from Dublin. And you'd be trying to dial on the old-style phones, dial, trying to get through to get on the quiz.
Because that was the thing, wasn't it? It wasn't just you rang and you got through.
No.
It was, the thrill was actually getting
even
through.
Getting through. And as I say, he'd pick four or five counties every day to let callers come from. And myself and the other lads in the shop, we always had a go at the ringing in, and then we'd be kind of competing at the, over the year, as to who won, who got the highest score.
So I'm going to ask you now, Joe Murphy, did the question suit you?
They did. Well, in most cases, they did. His range of questions suited my range of knowledge. I'm not saying I was brilliant, but it just happened that most of the questions he'd ask, I'd know the answers, so I was lucky that way.
So I was asking somebody else about this earlier on. Was it a subject of much bragging, Your prowess on the
probably,
Just a Minute quiz?
Yeah, it was probably within our inner circle, as it were, because of the fact that we were all having a go at trying to get on, you know. And also then you'd mention it to family and friends later on, or else they'd ring and say, oh, I heard you on the radio again.
Did you ever meet him in person?
Only once. He was in the outside broadcast, and he was up. We were going by, and we seen it. He was in Tesco in Ballybrack. and he had set up a kind of a stand in the shop with him doing the program from there. So, of course, I went over and got a request play.
You didn't tell him, do you recognise my voice from all those Just a Minute quizzes?
No, well, the thing was, I try not to ring too often because I reckon that maybe they might cop on that I'd been on before, you know. So I suppose I only average maybe 1-2 times a year. And I always kind of left a good 6 months behind. But the other lads would be on ringing in as well. My brother-in-law worked in the shop and he'd ring in. And then there was another guy in the shop and, you know, we'd all have a go at it and see how we did. But it was enjoyable. And it was always good to listen to him because he was always the first to play the new Irish songs and bands, no matter, as the other people have said, no matter what genre they were, he'd play them. And it was a good wide. And it was in FM, it was in stereo, and it made the equipment sound good.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, of course you are. Because that was the shop you were in, wasn't it?
Well, we would have radiogram stereo systems all over half the shop, you know. And the thing is, you could whack the volume up if there were no customers in, then just lower it down to a background noise if we had customers.
It's extraordinary the degree to which he was part of the fabric of the sound of Ireland for all those years, isn't he?
Yeah, it's gas. And prior to 2FM coming on, I used to listen to Gable in the mornings. On the equipment in the shop. So as I say, two of them gone, and I'd be a big fan of Marion now, mostly since she was on at the weekend, but I remember her from Liveline as well. But as I say, kind of three icons of the radio business gone in such a short time.
Indeed. Three icons. That's the only way to describe them. Joe, thanks for that. I want to go to Seamus now. Seamus Brehan, good afternoon.
Yeah, hello, Kate. How are you?
You were a huge fan of Larry's.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We have had the great privilege of meeting him and getting his autograph as well. And also having been lucky contestant on his programme on the quiz, which I didn't do very well, but he just said, they just didn't suit you. That was his usual way of speaking to people, you know, like that. They didn't do well, that was it, he just rang the law like that grandly, you know. But he came to Longford thanks to the winners. They brought him to Longford and he was phenomenal. He was God. And he came on a roller coaster to do the festival in Longford with RTE and in the square. And that was unbelievable the way everybody flocked around. And but like, he brought so much, he brought the great era of music to all our age group. At the time, and he introduced great bands that was coming and up and going in this country, and that's why we're deep with the knowledge of the music of the great bands like Blades, Aslan, U2, all of them, you know, Bagatelle, everyone, and he gave them all a great chance. That's why they were successful.
Yeah, it's to think now, actually, which one of those bands wouldn't have made it if it hadn't been for Larry Gogan championing their cause on his radio shows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's very hard to know because they were all class. They were all brilliant at the time and they were great musicians, and he knew that and he gave them all a great chance. And even on his programme at 1 o'clock, he was. Everybody used to be flocking to the radio. Who's number one today? Who's number one? You know, it was. He took people's interest. You know, and everybody really was so interested in the into Larry's program. And he had a great voice come across the board. You know, I remember texting him one time to him. The Beatles, John Lennon would be my favourite. You know, and I remember texting him one time and about playing. The wheels go round and round, or just like starting over, and he failed. And no problem, you know.
Did I hear you saying you got his autograph, Seamus?
That's correct, indeed. Yes, at the roller coaster in Longford, I did indeed. Yes, on a roller coaster sheet, RTE roller coaster sheet. Yeah,
and you still have it.
I have it. Yes, indeed. I have it. Just to put my hands on it, I can. It'll take me a little hour to get it, but I have it along with my all my memorabilia of Liverpool stuff and that. I keep all together, you know. But yes, I will have it. Yeah, I will. Like, he was we grew up in a Manly seat, and that's why I have a good knowledge of music. I love my music, all brands of music, and thanks to Larry really and truly, because he pumped all the great bands, even Gina Dale Hayes and the Champions, all them, he gave them all a great chance to explore their talents, you know. So he was God, and we'll never see the likes of him again. Honest, we never will. Like,
indeed.
It's a sad day for us all. Sad day for everybody.
It is.
For me, all staff, plus Ronan Collins, who great admiration for as well. You know, I met him. I spoke to him at Sonny Noel's funeral. It's funny enough.
It is. Seamus, a very sad day for everyone, obviously, particularly for his family, his nearest and his dearest. And I think I can talk now to Sinead Gogan. Sinead.
Yeah, hi.
Sinead, there are condolences from everyone here in the studio, in the team, all around RTE. People are so heartbroken today with the news.
Oh, Jesus, we all are. We can feel the love. Like, we're just getting messages and everybody listening to Ronan, to Ryan, to Liveline, and saying all the lovely tributes, and you're getting to miss some of it, but only now. I usually always listen to Joe. I'm listening in, and it's just so moving and touching to hear what everyone has to say about your father and has all nice things. And that's the way he was at home. He was just himself, like, exactly like that. He was no different with anyone else than with us. A great man, and we're all just heartbroken. And he'd be so embarrassed if he was hearing what everyone was saying. He'd be going, Jesus Christ, would you be...
He'd be hiding under the studio desk at this stage, I think.
Yeah, he'd be scarlet, like he would, like, you know. But that was just him. There was no airs or graces. He was just, what you saw is what you got, like.
Yeah, you're the baby of the family, Sinead.
I'm the baby of the family, yeah.
But it must be something to have grown up as Larry Gogan's daughter, because he was known everywhere he went.
Yeah, but we were... You just thought you were just normal like everyone else. You didn't... She was just your dad, like... You didn't go around and think, oh, my dad's kind of Larry Gogan. That's just your father, what he was. We just always thought, our mother taught us, everyone's the same, no matter who you are. Everyone's just a person at the end of the day. But, everyone would always say, oh, just a minute, the 60-second quiz to your...
And so, was he, like, when you were out and about, would people be coming over to him? Was that an issue, like, for the family?
Oh, no, never an issue. No, we'd always... what's the word, you know, give people his time, you know, no bother. No, it wasn't an issue, never an issue. He'd be happy to, you know.
And
that's what has him on the air.
Absolutely. But yeah. I mean, I know his health obviously was failing over recent years, even though he kept coming in here, he kept putting out
He loved going in there. Yeah, his second family.
Yes.
That's work kept him going. That's all he lived for, going in. All is on his mind is go back to work.
And I think people wouldn't have realised, because, as I say, he was there and his voice never changed and his enthusiasm never changed, but people wouldn't have realised the health issues he was struggling with. He was actually on dialysis at that stage.
Yeah, he was dialysis, but he'd probably be private that way, you know. He wouldn't be going on about stuff. He'd just get up and get on with it, keep on trucking.
Yeah.
But it's all very surreal, yeah.
It's surreal, yeah, because I suppose we wouldn't have understood, people have saying today that they had heard his health had been failing in recent weeks. Was it a shock in the end for the family, or?
Yeah, well, it's always a shock, you know, nothing ever prepares you. It was kind of quick, you know, it's one of these things, nothing prepares you for it, and it's all very surreal. It's hard, you know.
But the amount of love and the outpouring of affection for him today,
unbelievable. From everyone. And everyone nearly has a story.
Yeah, and
a listener, or work colleague, you know.
He met so many people, it seems. He seems to have actually physically touched people all over the country.
I suppose he was in their houses if they were listening to them, you know, at home and no matter in work. So he was in your life maybe some way or another. So they kind of they got to know him. Which they probably did, because he was just very, like, the very same at home, you know.
And that thing that Eleanor McAvoy said to us a while ago, that and I think Mike Murphy alluded to it as well, his absolute absence of ego was extraordinary in the business he's in.
Yeah. Oh, no, it'd be no ego, no. He just, that was it, go to work, come home, he'd be with my mother all the time, best of pals. Like a soulmate, wouldn't go anywhere without her. Wherever he went, she had to go.
They had the most extraordinary relationship, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, just a massive love for each other and for all of us. Like, you couldn't fault it, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful story.
Yeah, it is, which can be rare some days now these days. But yeah, no, just had a massive love for each other. And when my mother passed away, which would be 18 years this month, he just dedicated his life to all of us and his grandkids. He just kept going. I don't know how he did it, like, but he did.
Yeah.
Just, we were his life then, nearly, and then his work as well, and all his work colleagues, so fond of them all.
Sinead, stay with us, please, because one of those colleagues is on the other line. I want to bring him on now. Colm Hayes, good afternoon to you.
Hello, good afternoon. How are you?
Colm. Hi. And you, okay. I'll just let you talk to Sinead there, Colm.
Yeah, good. Hi, Sinead. How are you?
Well... not great.
I know. Yeah. But I mean, it must be amazing to think a living legend. Now, I remember being, I was actually at your mum's funeral, and such a huge turnout. I mean, he absolutely just loved her so much. And for everybody who worked in GFM, I came in as a young guy back in the late 80s, and I didn't know who I was going to meet. There was the Mark Cagneys and the Jerry Ryans and everything. And Larry was the shop steward. In the area, and he just took me under his wing and brought me from table to table and introduced me to everybody, and he was just the most genuine man, and we all looked up to him, and we've all learned so much. If anything, we learned humility from him, because in the media business there's too many egos, there's too many people thinking they're better than the next person, and Larry knew who he was, and he just loved the business, and he loved helping people come along in the business and you know, move up in the business. And he was amazing. He will be in all of our hearts for all of our lives.
That's very kind of you to say.
You have to be so proud of him,
Oh, we are very proud, yeah. That's very, very touching. Thanks for that.
He
means a lot.
Amazing. No, absolutely. And I think what I say rings out for thousands of broadcasters, not even just in Ireland, but I mean, the man was loved around the world as well. So many people.
Thanks very much.
And you, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Be proud of your dad.
And Colm, thanks for that. Colm, I know you lost your own dad recently, so.
I did. We lost my dad on Christmas Eve. We lost my dad on Christmas Eve.
Oh, God. I'm sorry to hear that.
No, a tough time, but again, a man.
That's devastating,
my dad, Yeah, my dad had put the years in and was loved and lived a great life as well, you know.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at somebody like Larry as well, and then this is the day that Marion's funeral, and only and I was on air when news came in about Terry Wogan as well. So, like, these amazing stalwarts of broadcasting that, you know, and then you go back to Jerry, who was a good friend of mine, that broke through the barriers of broadcasting, that changed the world of broadcasting, that showed the longevity of it. I mean, people are trying to shoot down radio every day of the week and say it doesn't exist anymore. Well, look at the outpouring today for Larry Gogan. Look at the outpouring for Marion, for Gay, you know, for Jerry, for Terry Wogan. These people made radio what it is. It's the most personable media you can have. You can be on your own in a room and you hear a voice of a friend like Larry's, and you suddenly feel warm again, you feel loved again, you feel like you've got a friend there. It's the only media that can do it. Netflix can't do that. I'm sorry, I love Netflix, but it can't make me feel warm and that I'm with a friend. Live radio is the only media that can do that. And you have these amazing personalities that have that ability to feel like they're sitting beside you and taking you through life.
You're right.
Sinead.
Sorry to hear about your father. Sorry, Colm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sinead, did you ever have a sense, like, we've heard, obviously, the major role that your father played in the careers of, you know, global megastars like you two. Did you have any sense in the house at home that was your dad, that he had that power and that role in those stars' lives?
Not really, you know, it's just a job, you know what I mean? That's just his work, you know. He'd come home and he'd be chatting about it, but, you know, we'd go, it's just part of his job, like, you know, you'd be going overwhelmed or start, I don't know, yeah.
And was he as happy as everyone? Certainly, if you talk to anyone here, he was the happiest man they knew. Was that carried over into his,
100%, 100%, yeah.
I suppose that's...
I don't think he ever gave out here. You know, he's always just happy, placid, comfortable in his own skin. Yeah. Just laid back as well. Oh, and you'd have the crack with him now as well. Oh, my God.
Oh, we've heard that too, Sinead. Yeah, that there's definitely...
Oh, yeah. He'd be a bit of a he could be a bit of a messer, like, you know, but... that was him. Whatever you want to say, and it was that was him.
What you saw was what you got.
Yeah, was what you got. Kind of laid back, had the crack with him. Yeah, just himself. Always welcoming to people. Give people his time. Yeah. So it'll be a big void in our lives now.
Absolutely, Sinead. And I want to thank you so much for
God, I wasn't expecting this at all.
I know you. No, I appreciate it. It's such a difficult day for you.
My head's all over the place. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm sure for listeners out there, they'll appreciate you coming on and sharing.
He was so fond of his listeners. Like, he had the crack with them, especially going out in the Rollcaster, and all the girls, his BAs that he went out with as well. Like, he adored them and having the fun going out with them, and he just loved his job.
And that's why you wanted to say that today.
Yeah, it was just so touching when you hear this. Like, it really is very moving when so many people have such nice things to say. Because we could be saying a lot worse, you know what I mean? So it's just to acknowledge that, yeah.
Well, we thank you for that.
Thanks so much.
Condolences to yourself and to your brothers and sisters, to Jared and Orla and Grainne and David and, of course, all the 12 grandchildren.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sinead.
Thank Gogan. You. Joe
Duffy. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we are, of course, sharing all our memories of the legend that was Larry Gogan. And we're just talking to his daughter, Sinead, there before the break, and just conscious that we've all lost the man on the radio, the colleague for many people here. But Sinead and her siblings have lost their dad. And so it's a very difficult day and a very sad day for them. But so many happy memories of Larry coming through to us. Roddy Doyle, good afternoon to you.
How are you, Katie?
Anyone who lives in Ireland, has lived in Ireland over the last 30 years will remember that there was a dog called Larry Gogan in the Snapper.
There was. There is. Yeah, I was thinking about it today, obviously, because it's a long time ago, but when I was starting that book in 1986, 1987, obviously the main attention was on Sharon announcing to her parents that she was pregnant. But they're in a house that's packed with other people, and among them was her brother, Jimmy Jr., as he became known. And he had aspirations towards being a DJ. And while Sharon and her parents are in the kitchen talking, they hear this booming voice from upstairs. This is Jimmy Rabbit all over Ireland. And it's what would have become a dark accent. He's trying to, you know, rid himself of his roots to truly become a DJ. And later on, it's a running gag through the book. And then not too later on, there's a dog comes into the house. And if I remember rightly, you know, the father, Jimmy Sr., suggests that they call the dog Larry Gogan. He's slagging his son, who is blissfully unaware that he's being slagged, because he thinks it's a great name. And the reason I chose Larry Gogan is because, first of all, he's such a well-known, or was a well-known, such a well-known figure here and much loved. But also because he would have been the only DJ that Jimmy Sr. would have known. He wouldn't have known the names of any others. He wouldn't have paid any attention to them whatsoever. So the name, you know, I wrote it at the time. I knew that The Commitments was going to come out in various parts of the world and was going to be translated at this stage. But when I was writing the dog's name, Larry Gogan, you know, it's a very Irish reference. But I thought, well, it's the better for it. I decided not to go for a British DJ, for example, or somebody who might have been a bit more internationally well known, because the point would have been missed, I think. So, so that's it. That's, if I remember right, it's sometime, you know, that's what, 33 years ago. So it's actually quite hard to recall accurately. But I think I was sitting at a table when I just decided to call the dog Larry Gogan.
Did Larry object to having a dog named after him?
Apparently not. No. I only met him a few times, but the first time I ever met him was I was in a hotel in New York. I was there. I was trying to remember the dates. It was Halloween 1998. I was there with what there was of my family then, and I was in a hotel at the lift waiting for the doors to open. The doors of the lift open, and Larry Gogan was at the other side of the doors. He was getting out, I was getting in. The two of us looked at each other and burst out laughing. And I've been told by other people that he was quite pleased that the dog was named after him. So, and it really, it wouldn't have worked with any other DJ that I can think of, you know, that... You know, yeah,
it was just perfect.
That we feel towards our animals and our dogs, particularly, would have been something a little bit like the warmth we would have felt for Larry. You know, but I met him very briefly a few times, just to shake hands with him when I was out in RTE or something, and just he was such a nice man, and always a big smile.
Always a big smile and huge warmth for everyone.
Yeah.
So that is the story of the dog called Larry Gogan.
And he's been translated into Japanese, into Spanish, Portuguese, Danish, German, you know, all sorts of languages. I don't know what Larry Gogan looks like in Japanese, but it's there.
And in the middle of the German translation, it would be German, 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 Larry Gogan.
Yeah.
You've got to love that. That is...
Yeah.
That is brilliant. Ronnie Doyle, thank you so much for
thank
giving
you.
Us the history of the dog called Larry. Maxie, good afternoon,
Katie,
Maxie.
How are you on this sad day for broadcasting?
Indeed, indeed, Maxie. You go back a very long way with Larry.
Right back to the early, early 60s when we were in Maxie, Dick and Twink, a three-girl group, and we were doing backing vocals, and Larry was comparing people... to forget that he was an actor first. He acted along with Gay Byrne, and he was a compere, and he was a very, very helpful guy to us in those days. We hadn't actually recorded anything, and he met us backstage at the Television Club in Harcourt Street, and he bounced towards us, Katie. He was like a male model. He had this beautiful smile and a beautiful bouncy walk, and he bounced into the dressing room and said, "Ladies, can I help you in any way?" And he helped me in every way, all through the different chapters of my life. He helped us to think out what we wanted to record. He helped us when we did record. He always promoted Irish music, as everybody said. And then when I went to try and go into broadcasting myself, I spoke to him and I said, "Gosh, there are no female DJs. Lar, I really need to do this." Kevin Hawke helped me put an idea of what I needed for the audition together. And on the day I was auditioning, the word went around the building that there was a lady auditioning for to become a DJ. And Larry came down and he stood in the corridor of the outer studio there, mm-hmm. and he gave me a little signal, and I went out and he gave me the biggest, tightest hug of confidence ever. And he said, "You'll be grand."
And you were, Maxie, you were.
I knew that a whole new chapter was about to begin. The other thing that strikes me looking back today, Katie, is he was a terrific, as Mike Murphy said, commercial reader. And he practiced, he was like Gay in that he practiced. And sometimes PR people would book 45 minutes for him to read a 30-second commercial. And Lara would be in and out in a minute because it was always perfect.
Yeah, he had that golden voice.
He had that golden voice, but he also loved what he was doing, was so happy to be in the job he loved. Loved Flory, loved the family. Mike mentioned there he got an offer from BBC. I know he also got an offer from Radio Luxembourg.
Did he?
And yes, he did. And Flory said, "Where's Luxembourg?" They had to look it up on the map. But that was the centre of pop music at the time. And he said, "No, the kids are in school. I don't want to move them. And I'm really happy where I am." And he was so happy in the job that nothing would dissuade him from being there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and it was so lovely to hear from Sinead, his daughter Sinead, there in the programme, where she described how he was exactly what we got on radio was exactly what they got at home. Like somebody who was just so happy and enthusiastic about their job and their life and their work and how they went around about their days.
And again, about the listeners, he loved the listeners. He travelled all the time doing discos around the place. So he was always in touch and people approached him and he knew the power that he had in the programme. I mean, my grandmother lived to be 100 and he did a request for her. And she said to me, that was better than my pension.
But you actually talked to Flory about how they got together, didn't you?
I did. I did it with the honour of doing a This Is Your Life on Larry many moons ago, organised by the late Bill O'Donovan and Lucia Proctor. And I was the compere. So I spent many a happy lunchtime with Flory. And I was fascinated by how shy Larry was, because we all knew the public Larry and the actor. And so Flory told me a lovely story about they met when she was 16. And she said she really fell in love with him on sight, and he hoped he'd fallen in love with her at first sight. But she said, I couldn't get him to move to ask me out. So she said, I hit on an idea. They worked together in Lucky Cody in the news agents in the heart of Dublin. And she said, I hit on this idea. She said, I said to him one day, Larry, your brother is only gorgeous. And he said, Flory, do you want to come out and see Ben Hur, the picture with me?
So that's how she nabbed him.
That's how she nabbed him. She gave him the nudge. And we often joked about it in later years. And I remember being on a tribute programme to him with Miriam O'Callaghan, and Lara sat beside me for the whole programme. And we were chatting about that. And he said, I don't know if I would have had the confidence, because he wanted her so much that he didn't actually have the confidence. So sometimes there's that dichotomy of being an outward person and yet having an inward lack of confidence. But Flory was the perfect match for him. And it was, as Sinead said, it was made in heaven, that love story.
Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful story, a lovely story, and quite a rare story, I think, in these times.
Crazy about each other. And now, you know, Katie, we just close our eyes and we can hear his voice. And that's the power of the man.
Absolutely. And he is part, as I said earlier, part of the fabric of Irish life over the last 4 or 5 decades. Maxie, thank you for that. I want to go to Jim Lockhart now. Jim, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie. How you doing?
He was a huge supporter of the Horslips as well, of course.
He was, like, from very early on, from the very start. And like many another Irish band, I mean, we were hugely in his debt. And any time we ran into him, he was, he was a great vibe. He was always full of good vibes. And then later on, I remember we used to do a regular New Year's Eve gig in Red Island in Skerries. And once or twice, 2FM did their New Year's Eve broadcast from out there. And it was Larry who was spinning the discs and doing the Auld Lang Syne and all the rest of it. It was great fun. And you nailed it yourself earlier on. You said, with Larry, what you saw was what you got. And as Sinead said, he was comfortable in his own skin. Now, Larry was just one of nature's gentlemen. He was always good-humoured in all the years. So after the band finished, then I had the good fortune to work with Larry in the Radio Centre. And in all those years, I never saw him in a bad humour. I was trying to think, there was somebody else I kind of vaguely remembered that was the case with, and it was Tony Fenton, God rest him. Because Tony was always, both of them shared a wicked, mischievous sense of fun, sense of humour, but with totally without any malice at all. You never heard Larry bad vibing anybody. He was just always sort of positive, good vibes.
But then, Jim, it occurs to me, though, he must have had stresses in his life. You know, he was human. He had to have stresses. He had to be
totally
frustrated by events. And yet, nobody can ever recall him showing it.
No, the only time I ever saw him being kind of threatened by life was at Flory's funeral, because the pair of them were such an item and they were so mad about each other. And you always had the impression, there was a great dynamic between them. You always had the impression that Flory wore the pants. But there was that great sense of fun in the relationship as well. And so Flory's death was devastating for Larry. As you know, when we thought that might be coming, we reckoned that it was going to be difficult for him to handle. But he handled it, and he never was that public about being grief stricken or anything like that. He just got up and rolled with the punches and got on with it. And
as Sinead said to us there, and devoted the last 18 years then to his children and his grandchildren.
Yeah, and huge condolences to Sinead and Jared and David and the rest of the family, and indeed to his radio family as well, to Helen and Jane and Jean and Carol, because they were almost like a second family, the girls who worked with them. And I know that the four of them were out to see him a couple of weeks ago.
Jim, and I think in fairness, Larry will understand this. I have to go to my last break. But thank you so much for joining us with that.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And that's all we have time for on today's tribute to Larry Gogan, the late, great Larry Gogan. Just to tell people that today, of course, Marion Finucan was also laid to rest. If you missed the recording of her funeral mass, which was shown live on television, it will be shown again this evening on RTE News Now at 7 p.m. And that's it. Jamie Doyle was on sound. Laurie Lee Davies is the BCO. Today's programme was produced by Fergus Sweeney, and Ray Darcy is next.